Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's arms, silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance.
Thank you, darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets at the Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. Please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Neutron tomorrow as the After Midnight Bada. And then Thursday morning, delve into a world of strange magic with Ingrover and Dust and Victoria Frost. Friday, split between crawling into the darkness with Pam and break on through. And Saturday, let Afrasiana and Babla, Don, teach you how to don both part sinner and part saint. And then on Monday, join Victoria Frost for Hearts of Late Night Poets and Black Lace Sire. These shows are designed to shoot in color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. Now, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray and I can't wait to get into and use your world. Hello, Pam.
Hey, Rex. All right. Good listing of the shows there. Very cool. And so how's your night going?
Wet.
Yes, I understand that. I'm guessing it's raining where you are. It is not raining here, but it is so miserably hot that I pretty much I'm convinced my body right now is 99.9% sweat, and I keep having the urge to stick my head in the freezer just to feel normal.
Okay.
It is. And I know it's not hot, like you're used to this kind of hot. Like today it was like around 90-some, like 92. It was 92 degrees today and around the same temperature yesterday, which I know in your area is about average, but for early June in Wisconsin, it is hot, and I am just not used to it. So,
well, we haven't had a 90-degree day yet.
You suddenly sounded like a robot. Did you hear that? You still sound like a robot. How do I sound?
Fine.
Okay. Well, geez. I hope that changes because I might have to. I'm going to mute you and unmute you. I don't know if that'll do any good, but let's find out. So here we go. Muted and unmuted. Speak, Rex.
Why?
Dang it, you still sound the same. We will move forward with the show and hope that improves. Otherwise, I will have to maybe consider hanging up on you or calling back and calling you back. Okay. So, I'll go ahead and I'll put the first poem up. All right. I'm thinking here. I'm really sorry, but that's going to bother me if that voicing doesn't change. You know, all right.
Well, you only do one of two things. You can either wait and see what happens, or just hang up the damn line.
Right. Well, that's what I was trying to figure out. There you go. Now you're back to normal. No, I was just trying to figure out how much longer I wanted to wait, like if I wanted to get through the first poem, or if I just wanted to, you know, try to immediately fix the problem. So, all right. Okay, there's your voice back. All right. Up first is Ask Them for a Visitation Dream by Pink Fairy 5. And this is actually the last carryover we had from Crowley. And it goes like this. People go along in their life and then bam, dead, deceased, kaput. Survivors sit by a headstone and talk to them. I am not kidding. They are not in there, folks. Their body is nothing. The soul is their essence. Visitors are now spread eagle on the grave sobbing. What the what? Do they believe in a soul? I am gobsmacked. Curious. All those Sundays spent in church and they think dead is dead. Sure, the body is gone, going faster and faster, turning to dust. But what about the soul, people? Do you not realize the soul cannot die? The soul is busy rolling her eyes at your silliness. Pay attention to the soul. She has gone on with her life. The soul is real, more real than this flesh life ever was. It was a shell, a suit, a costume. Get off the grave. It is nothing, a waste of money even. Your memories and photos are the real deal. Pick yourself up and go home where your loved ones occasionally visit. Better yet, ask them for a visitation dream. Sometimes it is the only way to get them to get one. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. Actually, I like the humor in this. Dead, bam, dead, deceased, kaput. Gobsmacked. I like that thought. But that third stanza, where was it? No. Where is it? The soul is real, more real than this flesh life ever was. It was a show, a suit, a costume. Get off the grave. It is nothing. A waste of money, even. Yeah, the only thing Ping didn't actually delve into, yeah, it's just a bloody meat suit. So I like the humor she threw in with that and the reality. Yeah, it's just a physical representation of what's truly on the inside. So you know what? Ah, I do like that thought of getting off the grave, go home. You've got what's sitting there, memories, photos, little knickknacks you picked up along the way. There is more of them there than there is in that grave itself. So if you're going to hold on to something, it is in those moments, not graveside, because like she said, you want a visitation dream. It's a possibility. She bit onto
herself.
Ordinary morality is for ordinary people.
Yeah, and that was a great take on that prompt. You know, I will say, though, in my personal opinion, I don't think most people who go to graves think that, don't believe in a soul. I think they do believe in a soul. I think the grave gives them something to focus on. But I really like the meat of what she has to say in her poem. And I really like what you had to say, and I think it's very true, is there is more, like if you're going to hold on to those memories, when you're at home amongst the photos and their items and, you know, the other things that were a part of their life, you know, that's where the real memories are, the real spirit of them is. And I, for one, you know, like when my stepmother died, I had several dreams about her coming to visit me in my dreams. And, you know, so I think it definitely, I don't think it happens with everyone and with every death, but I do think there is that potential. And, you know, especially if there are things left unsaid, you know, and I do like how she says, and Pink says in here, get off the grave, it is nothing, a waste of money even. I think too often we spend a lot of money on fancy stuff for funerals and burials. And you know, I realize people need closure, but that stuff means absolutely nothing to the dead. It is really for our own comfort that we do it. And of you know, everybody grieves in their own way. But, and I do have to agree with you, Rex, this definitely had some great humor to it. And especially when she says, the dead deceased kaput. And then they are not in there, folks. Like, you could almost, I feel like she could be holding up a megaphone and shouting across a field while saying that line. So, excellent write and very well done. And I should have grabbed the next poem while you were talking, and I did not do that. I will do that now. All right. All right. Up next is "And I'm So Weak" by Versus Goliath. And Rex, go ahead, give that a read for us, please.
"And I'm So Weak" by Versus Goliath. Bye. Good luck, babe. Famous last words from recent ex. Porch light flickers. On again. Off again. Then on to the next. Dimlit figure ruminates mistakes in rain puddle reflection. Door closed. Red hair drenched. Homeless. Need direction. Cardboard boxes taped. Pencils. Pens. Flash drives stored. Order of memories, experiences, or poetry when bored. Hazel eyes are fixed on calendar. Exercise routine, inner core. Poor man's gym, planks, building self into something more. More on this later, but now. Broadcaster blurs into buzz. Four blades pulse, fluorescent thumb, proves not what it was. Purple pink smoothie, world brain, emulsified dip fuzz. Forgotten remnants, soft holes in kitchen, from behind you. Frozen strawberries, banana, protein, bit of almond milk. Poor habitual creature she was, we're of the same ilk. Birds of feather flock together, study, voice silky. Anchor drags nostalgia to engine whir, ice chunks cracking. Apple crunches between calcium incisors, macro to micro. Ignoring gravity, soul system floats galaxy speed, row, row. Supermassive black hole near Sagittarius, healers glow. Chiron, ironically immortal, Prometheus is chained, lower, lower. Helios the beam, brightly on humanity, fire, clay, and boat. O2, breathing, chemicals, reactions, electrons, forgive. Covalent bonding, water produced, all energy conserved. Harmonious shared existence, simple science, observed. It's too abstract, what's it supposed to be, the critic says. Gallery lights. Specify focus and artist's key for gaze. Greedy blue characters against brown gray Ziploc bag inlay. Allegory of a fake hollow feeling since that one rainy day. Intellectualism, profound eureka's, only gave light a limit. Black hole that descends of myself past, a vacuous omit. Ever expand like our beautiful universe, floors admitted. Hope you forgive my youth. Final text to her, submitted. End poem. Well, you get to kick it off.
Great read there, Rex. I have to say, this has some really clever phrasing throughout. And he wrote to the MCR song line, "So many bright lights that cast a shadow, but can I speak?" Let's see. Wow. Okay, trying to separate this. Red hair drenched, homeless, need direction, cardboard boxes, tape, pencils, pens, flash drives, stored, quarters of memories, experiences for poetry when bored. That imagery right there makes me think of how, you know, it's the tough times that build, are the building blocks for the best poetry. And I like how this has a very, almost like a very sci-fi type feel to it. A very, I'm trying to pinpoint the exact genre that it reminds me of, but when it does the transfer to more on this later, but now broadcaster blurs into buzz. It's almost like living in this, utopian type environment where, but I don't know if utopian is the right phrase, but where everything's like very much controlled by the media, like what you get exposed to, what you get to hear, you know, and life has this fakeness to it. Birds of a Feather Flock Together study say voice silky, anchor drags nostalgic anchor ward. Now, the silky voice adding in Birds of a Feather Flock Together, again, kind of has that sci-fi feel of a sense of being controlled and manipulated to believe that you must think like everyone else. And I like that he brought in Chiron and the Sagittarius healer's glow, Prometheus chains, Helios beams brightly on humanity, fire clay invoked to live, old to breathing chemicals, reaction electron to give, convalent bonding, simple science observed. You know, I think the general idea I get from this is that at this moment in this story, the poet is the unique thinker because everything and everyone is based on science. And I like how there's almost this kind of a judgmental tone near the end where it says it's too abstract. What's it supposed to be? As if there it's a world where there is no use for something that doesn't make complete sense to everybody. I think it's a wonderfully layered and thought-provoking write and very well done. And, of course, as always, Rex, I look forward to hearing your thoughts.
Well, that opening is one hell of a kiss off by Good Luck Bay, famous last words, while he's standing on the doorstep, redhead dressed homeless, needs directions, and cardboard boxes, pencils, pen flashlights, all the orders and memories, all that stuff that goes on. Then that next one, more on this later, but now broadcast the blurs and the buzz. And then there's that thought to the almost the emulsification of life itself, purple pink smoothie, the swirl brain, emulsified bits of buzz, those little remnants, those little tidbits that rattle in the mind in the moment, ice chunks cracking, anchor drags nostalgia, then enters apple crunch between apple incisors, macro to micro, then the thought with the supermassive black hole near Sagittarius. So I'm guessing the Sagittarius thought is fine. The supermassive black hole, got to be the heart. Just drop us up the heel and go at the end of that. And the Prometheus has changed lower, lower. There's that thought of being tied to that that rock and having your insides eaten by that eagle, so to speak. The chemical reactions, electrons to give, the simple science observed, and there's that note of a harmonious shared existence, which is no more. And the abstract angle, it's the back end of this, because even though they might have been birds with feather, obviously the abstract is part of the issue. Intellectualism, profound eureka's only gave light a limit. Black hole of centered myself past the vacuum emit. Then he hits on the last two lines, where ever expand like our beautiful universe floors admitted. Right, there's a noted tonal change. Maybe half the problem was him, and he's offering up that last thought. Hope you forgive my youth. Final text to her submitted. So there's that daunting note of, all right, you got to grow up. And then he gets shown the door because he hasn't, so to speak. But he's still admits to the fact that he has flaws just like everybody else. And you know what? Forgiveness is something you get from a larger essence as opposed to just getting tossed.
Yeah, yeah, I could definitely see that. So just to let you know, your phone or your voice is acting up again. I assume it's your phone. I actually hung up my phone and called back while you were commenting, so I didn't catch your whole comment. And that didn't seem to fix the problem. So if it doesn't straighten itself out, I'm going to put the intro song on and then hang you up and then, you know, and then call you back. So, but are you being a smartass, Mr. Roboto? All right.
Well, my vaccine remembers something about that. Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto. Domo, 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 domo.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and read a poem, and we'll see how things go from there. So, all right. And is Get Over It by Pam 8. And it goes like this. Don't like molestation at 3. Get over it. Don't like being told how to act and who to be. Get over it. Think life is cruel and unfair. Get over it. Show your rebellion with your clothes and your hair. Get over it. Your brother set fire by a kid he helped. Get over it. Manipulated and swindled by friends. Get over it. Raped and abused. Develop a thick skin. Get over it. Some days it feels like I simply can't win. You have no right. You don't have greater pain than me. Get over it. Heads in bags, eyes gouge out, a brain avalanche until they can no longer see. I don't want to hear about you, blah, 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 blah. I can't hear you. It's all about me. Words of truth fall upon the ears of the deaf. Get over it. End poem. And she took actually prompt 1 to type the MCR song lines, which was, and you must keep your soul like a secret in your throat.
Mostly red. This is like a bitch slap to all those workers and wannabes who want everything for free. Get over it. You ain't that good. And you shouldn't be coddled like a little baby anymore. Get over it. I picture that. That mohawk on that cat with the glasses, that's kind of vicious, especially that spiked dog collar. That kind of gives you an idea of how incoherent some people like this can be. Yeah, there's a lot of truth in here, because you hear those things that, like the opposite. Don't like molestation at 3? Yeah, get over it. Raped and abused? Develop a thick skin. Get over it. And you know what? All of those actions that get lost because everybody is so busy. Me, 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 me. The ones who actually need the help don't get shit. So they all need to be bitch slapped. Get over it. And stop with the talking heads on TV. Get over yourselves.
I definitely see what you're saying, and especially like when you mentioned how there are people who take, you know, and you know, for people that, like, there are people who will make up stories, who will say things don't happen, but I think the majority of people who go through abuse and neglect do need their voices heard. You know, I don't know. To me, I really felt like the get over.
That wasn't my point on them. It's them being told to get over it. That's what keeps those voices quiet.
Okay.
I think that was the point she was trying to get over. Because down here, I don't want to hear about you, blah, 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 blah. It's all about me, 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 me. Point being, get over yourself. You're not that important.
Well, I like the style of this poem and the picture that went with it, you know, I agree that with the idea that a lot of people want, you know, victims to be quiet, that they want them to just, you know, never talk about it, never. You know, just put it in the past completely. Never let it be in your mind or part of your life. Never feel sad. Never feel angry. You just have that whole attitude, as you mentioned, Rex, of that whole get over it attitude to where the point that people who go through stuff like this no longer feel like they have any right to speak. And the people who are telling them to get over it, and again, as you mentioned, Rex, are the ones who really just, they want to be the center of attention. Excellent, right, and very well done. And I do like that cat picture. That is really cool.
Yes. Claude Ball, Five Cats Revenge.
What is it?
Claude Ball, Five Cats Revenge.
Oh, okay.
That was a joke.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Just like
I'm
the
sure
book Yellow River.
Oh. Okay. And see here. Up next. All right. Up next is War Worn Lipstick Advertisement by Alleyway Wonder. And Rex, go ahead, give that a read.
Okay. War-Worn Lipstick Advertisement by Mark Lupi. How red can a mouth get? I mean, a rose is a start, mashed forcibly on the lips, but it's no more, unless it twists and drips with blood tapped in from alternate overflows. Needle stuck in its center from a hose fed by a dying life. The monitor blips and no more bloody rose. When the pulse dips, its mystical deep carnage comes and goes. Unfortunately, it's pretty much the same with other products. Purifying flame burns, yes, a deeper red upon the mouth, but also burns the world by our one truth. That's war-worn lipstick, a distillation of a million soldier zombies and their murdered love. End poem. Okay, I like that book. Different ending. Well, what'd you
think? Yeah. Oh, I really liked this one, too. That was a great read. And I like that the prompt was just give us war-worn lipstick, blood, and purifying flame. And I like that he turned it into an advertisement. And this worked really well as is. Although I could really see it also being expanded and taking on more of that the kind of like late night advertisements you see where there's like half hour blocks, but that'd be a half hour long poem, but infomercial type thing. I could so totally taking on the infomercial, but I do like the voice that he used in this. It kind of had that nice, dark, twisted humor. And like a lot of advertisements, it starts with a question: how red can a mouth get? And then he goes into this imagery, this blood tapped in from alternate flows, needle stuck in its center from a hose fed by a dying life. And it's very much a lot of that imagery in the middle stanza makes me think about what people will go through. For beauty, like the idea that they will inject Botox into their faces, and all the, you know, poison and all the different things they'll go through for beauty. And I like that also it says, you know, at the end where it says, unfortunately, it's pretty much the same with other products. Purifying flame burns, yes, a deeper red upon the mouth, but also burns the world. It's almost like when you, That end stanza reminds me of when you read or watch or listen to a commercial about medicine, and it tells you all the wonderful things the medicine will do to help you. And then at the end, there's like this huge list of side effects. It kind of reminds me of a Saturday Night Live spoof where they'll do a spoof commercial about a medicine, and then they'll have like a whole like long list of like completely ridiculous side effects, and yet some of them, it's not far off from the truth. So I just think this is a very clever write and well done.
Thank you very much. I think it hits on a number of things. You got lipstick to open up that first stanza. I write red can a mouth get. I mean, a rose is a start, mashed forcibly on the lips. But it's no more. Because it wears off at some point and gets daubed, unless it twists and drips with blood tapped in from alternate overflows. There's that sort of in order to give lips color, you have to have a little bit of color in the lips to begin with. Now that center one, the monitor the blips and no more bloody rose when the pulse dips, as mystical deep corners comes and goes. There's the angle of death in that moment, and all the color being drained. The mystical deep carnage is that blood flow, but when the heart stops, so goes the that deep color. And again, you go back to that pale source. Now the bottom one, the purifying flame, it kind of hints to me at the sort of some church angle, or at least a religious angle. Purifying flame, you know, like witches being tossed on the fire back in the old days. Purify, get the evil out. And then burns, yes, a deeper red upon the mouth, but also burns the world. There's a duality there, because then he hits on the war-torn lips, a distillation of a million soldier zombies and their murdered love. Again, you've got the red lipstick as up top in the front, but now it's on a million soldier zombies, and typically the zombies are all walking dead anyway, so you backhale deathly grip once more. And their murdered love, they're not getting enough brain seed.
I like that. I didn't even think about that, but it makes so much sense when you talked about the religious angle of it, about the whole idea of the blood being offered up, and then the purifying flame being like the idea of the witches being. Hold on, did I? I didn't leave my dog outside, did I? Oh, fuck, I did. Ah, shoot. Okay. Hold on. I got to call her in. She ran away. Would you go ahead and put up the next poem and give it a read? I'm sorry.
Okay. All right, where is this? There. What do we got? Hello, come on, work with me.
Are you there, Paul? I'm sorry, Rex.
Yes, I'm getting it.
Okay.
All right, we've got Moon Eye by Orange Sage. An eye, huge and harsh and white, came prowling. Its orange rings blinked, piercing with elastic clouds and black lace bows. It split like mercury along the sky's midriff, across a neon flashing steel glass silvered side, the shiny duck of ebb, broken dreams and high-rise shoot of paradise, hot bins faced shadow ghosts with lipless kisses and alley hisses in a hint of dawn. A wobbling, purple stilettoed howl faltering down the steel, the soft feel of ashes warm against her cheek. And orange took this broken city skylight butane on my skin. All right. What did you think?
I really liked this one. And I did want to also just finish up saying that I really liked what you had to say about Alleyway Wonder's home, and that I could just, once you said it, I could so see that taking on the whole religious, the persecution of the witches and the zombie-like groups of big religions that oftentimes happen. But now this poem, this is really cool. I see it is her profile picture, so I'm going to guess it seems like it's a photo that she took. I'm not 100% sure, but I like it either way, and I like the idea of describing the moon as something prowling, its orange ring glint piercing ripped elastic clouds and black lace bowels. It slips the mercury along the sky's midriff. There's a tone of dark sensuality within this. And I like how between the two stanzas, she has the word across, as if, you know, as if between the dark and the light, there is something that needs to be crossed. Hot bins of high-end warming fire and red lace shadows, ghosts with lipless kisses and alley hisses in a hint of dawn. You know, I guess for me it's interesting how the beginning seems like the kind of imagery that you could almost see out in the country or away from the city. And then the second part seems like the kind of like ugly imagery you would see if you walked through a city and saw the homeless got gathered around garbage cans. And I think for me, I get the impression that this is everything that the moon sees as it rises up into the sky, and there it is all there being taken in. I think this is a wonderful write all the way through and very well done.
Absolutely. I like that thought in that first stanza. It slipped like mercury along the sky's midriff. Ring to it. And also, and the combination she did in that first line, a neon flashing steel glass silvered sign, that gives the impression of a cooler thought coming into the city off those glass and steel high rises. They do give a sigh because they kind of breathe a little easier with the night chill because they're no longer burning in the sunlight. The broken dreams in high rise shoot up paradise. That's the picture. What is supposed to be a nice clean city, but there's a double thought to the shoot up paradise, both fire and heroin use. Hot bins of hand warming fires and red faced shadow ghosts with lipless kisses and alley hisses. The lipless kisses, what is that in part? The fact that there's not a whole lot of love in that moment. The alley hisses are it can be the cats, but it can also be those people protecting what little they have at that box. The wobbling purple stiletto howl, I like that for the street walker faltering down, the soft feel of ashes warm against her cheek. There's that noted touch of maybe the self-burn where the tears falling down her cheeks are the
that singular thought of how broken the city is, and they burn their way down our cheeks.
I like that thought. I like that. Yeah, there's definitely, you know, for a poem that's a brevity, there's quite a lot to dig into, and you really have to appreciate that.
Well, what are we doing next?
Up next, we're going to jump to a right from a break on through, the last break on through show. And this was inspired by the prompt, the painting, I Am Olga, or Olga Deep in Thought, sorry. And this is Who Am I by Daniel Dischino. And it goes like this. Who am I? A question I might not want to know, yet here I am, cursed with contemplation, attacked by unrelenting thought. I grow so weary of the battle and pray for mercy from the truth of which I speak. Sorry, let me try that again. I grow so weary of the battle and pray for mercy from the truth of which I seek. Truth I am hoping will guide my path. For all paths lead to death, but not all paths are the same. Which one is correct? All creatures walk the path, but not all creatures know why or know where they are going. But death cannot define me, for it is a shared fate. And in the now I am life, I am flesh and bone, I am heart and blood, I am breath and carnage. I am every creature to walk the earth. I am mind, I am body, I am desire, and I am peace. I am water, I am rock, I am earth, and I am fire. I am made for the stars, and I am born from the oceans. I am 1 billion years in the making, and I am a flash in the illumination of time. I am everything. I am all. But alas, what I have found is everyone. I am no different than any other mortal being. Where has this all taken me? Perhaps back to the beginning, back to the question, who am I? Within the question itself, might just be the answer. Who am I? I am. And poem.
Great read. This could have worked well on other level for philosophy-wise, because it walks that questioning path of who am I? Where am I going? And I like that one stanza. I am mind, I am body, straight down to I am all, where he's got the thought of I am made of stars, I'm earth, I'm fire, I'm rock, I'm water. I am 1 billion years in the making, and I am a flash in the illumination of time. There's a double thought there, 1 billion years in the making, and yet a single flash in the notation of time, because death comes to everyone, and in death, the years we live are but a raindrop in an ocean of water. Now, I like that last thought, too. Who am I? I am. Kind of walks that thought of Cogito Ergo Sum by René Descartes. I am, I think, therefore I am. But this fits on that note of thought, as long as one is pondering the world and its universe and themselves, then they are alive enough in all things to understand you still are a singularity, even if every other mortal around you wears the same suit, so to speak, and we're no more different than the next one in line.
Absolutely, yeah. I like that. I love that. You know, and you're right. Philosophically, it works real well on several levels. The last line, of course, made me think of the biblical reference to Jesus Christ referring him to himself as I am, where he said to the Pharisees, before you were, I am. And it was a very purposeful thing that he said, because of the fact that the Hebrew God was referred to as the I am. And so by phrasing the sentence that way, he was saying,
you know, I am God. And, you know, that's just, you know, what it made me think of. And I think that can be taken on a personal and philosophical level, and the idea of that trying to find yourself, you find a connection to a higher power. And I really like how this has that first-person narrative. And I like the phrase cursed with contemplation. I think that is an excellent phrase to counteract. Like it's basically that whole idea of ignorance is bliss, but said in the opposite way. Like I'm not that ignorant person who's blissful. I don't, you know, not think. I'm cursed with contemplation, the idea that I am constantly thinking. I always am thinking, and I need to have an answer. And then to feel, like how he keeps saying over and over again, I am, and to and that has, like I said, very spiritual connotation. But the first person narrative also gives it almost a feeling of I don't know if selfishness is the right word, but you know, that's the word that comes to mind. The whole idea of like, so being so selfishly focused on yourself, and then to realize that how important you thought you were, all the rest of humanity is as equally important. So, but I think this is a wonderful write and very well done. And I do like that you brought up the I think, therefore I am. But I think that does fit really well with that in mind. So, excellent poem.
Off to the races, where to next?
What's that?
Off to the races, where to next?
Absolutely. All right. Up next, we have By Fires Learned by Theo Onick. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Wow, no SoundCloud from Theo?
No SoundCloud.
That's unusual.
Yeah.
All right. By Fires Learned by Theo Onick. How else to learn? You didn't teach us all the hard lesson. How could we forget? Why did we forget the hard lesson to be learned? How else to learn but by fire, sword, and stone crushing bodies, wasting lives for your return, happy to the glory of your home? How should one learn? It wasn't you the one who taught us well, losing a path to the other side of the page. Your skin inked with all the truth your bud can bear. With me, you can either leave or stay. How else to learn? But by waters drilling, pouring, and washing away that waste of material to feed another stay to the surface, the strained attempt to keep your heart in the worry of catching the deep, fresh breath of the lonely. How else to learn? What am I, another drunk in the gutter, imagining herself the princess she would respect? Oh! If there was something to respect. How else to learn but by fires to lose and conquer it all and come? And Theo took the prompt. Black is the kiss, the touch of a serpent's sun.
Great read, Rex.
Well,
I have to say, yeah, absolutely. I have to say, I think this is a great take on the prompt. It's a bit different. And I like that it focuses on education and learning. And, of course, I like that it has the question, how else to learn? You didn't teach us all the hard lessons. How could we forget? Why did we forget the hard lessons to be learned? And you know, it's interesting how in the one line, there's almost this accusatory tone of, you didn't teach us all the hard lessons, almost as if a parent figure or life, or even if it's speaking to like a personification of life, like we got it too easy. We, you know,
you know, you didn't teach us these hard lessons. But then it goes, it has that question, how could we forget? Why did we forget? And then all of a sudden it's like as if there's this line missing, but not really missing because you get to fill it in. And this idea that this parental figure, the life in general, just said, I taught you that lesson. You just forgot it. And I also like how else to learn. I think that's a very important statement. I think that we have to remember that learning is not a cookie cutter thing. We don't, everybody doesn't learn the same way. And especially if you find yourself not learning lessons from difficult things in life, maybe it's time to process your own way of learning. What am I, another drunk in the gutter, imagining yourself a princess you would respect? Oh, if there was something to respect. Now, the interesting thing about that line, it is also fits with that one quote that you had in your Oscar Wilde contest about how we're all laying in the gutter. So I thought that was really cool. And how else to learn but by fires to lose and conquer all? I thought that was a really clever reference to a trial by fire. So really a strong and thought-provoking write. Very well done. And, of course, I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts, Rex.
For me, there's a religious angle to this. How else to learn? You didn't teach us all the hard lesson. The hard lesson to be learned. There's that notation of learning the lessons in church, but not being taught the hard lessons of life itself, only to be thrown out into that life without the knowledge of understanding how that life works. It hits on that second stanza. How else to learn but by fires, sword and stone, crushing bodies, wasting lives for your return, happy to the glory of your home. So there's kind of a noted thought to it. Yeah, leaving the church behind, losing one's faith and wandering in the outback, so to speak. It wasn't you the one who taught us well, losing a path to the other side of the page. Your skin inked with all the truth your blood can bear as an offering from the cross, so to speak, and taking in the chalice, the cup, and then offering, with me, you can either leave or stay. So that there's that note to what you either have faith or you don't, and you can either take it or you can leave it. The waters, that kind of hits me up, how life pours over you, the waste of material, the food never stays, the service, the stream, the attempt to keep your heart in the worry of catching a deep, fresh breath of the lonely. There's that hits that note of being truly alone because you've got nothing left to bind yourself to something. Now, that last second last stanza, imagine yourself the princess you would respect. Oh, if there was something to respect, that's the problem. You don't respect yourself. How can you have anybody else give you respect? It doesn't kind of walk that way. I think the junk in the gutter, kind of a metaphor of treating yourself properly in order to have others treat you the same way, conquer it all. There's that note at the end of losing everything in the fire of your own demise. That gives you the opportunity to actually conquer, because at that point you can't get any lower.
I like those thoughts. And I like the way that you brought up the idea that, you know, the church will teach those church things, but they don't always teach practical life things. And just some excellent comment there. And all right, let's see what we have next. And all right. Up next is Swinging Back and Forth by Betty Page, and it goes like this. Razor-sharp blades glide all across my naked flesh. I don't feel a thing. I am no martyr. I just need to feel real numb, succumb to numbness, as high as cocaine, just be as one with madness, drive myself insane. Memories haunt me, my death easier than life since I was his wife. Don't know how I'm here, want to rise above it all. I won't feel so small. He cut me with lies, switchblades going back and forth, violent they glide. Echoes in my mind, hearing his voice from their mouths, mocking, taunting, laugh. So I stay inside, it penetrated here too. No, nowhere is safe. Belittles constant. I don't know what love feels like, maybe never have. End poem.
Very good, Kim. Betty went a little dark for a change. It was a little different. Although it does start out with a kind of touch of sensuality at the top of the razor. Sharp waves glide all across my naked flesh. I don't feel a thing. So there is that notation of maybe there is something different. But then again, I am no martyr. And I need to feel enough to come to numbness. As high as cocaine, just as one would make us drive myself insane. Then it starts getting a little darker, and then the thought coming right down to the rest of it hits on those notes of abuse, not physical, but mental and verbal, echoes in my mind, hearing his voice from their mouth. Boy, that kind of hits on the thought. He's got maybe a couple of personalities, or he's in a state of three circumstances, maybe gentle drugs on one hand, straight the next. So there's a plethora of voices to fill my mind. And then the inside penetrated here to nowhere is safe now. There is a thought of actually of being needing a serious lifeline, because now nothing is false, because you don't even have the sanctity of your own mind.
Absolutely. I like, you know, and you are right. This is different for Betty, because a lot of times even when she writes dark, there's a bit of sensuality, and here we have no sensuality. We're very much delved into a realm of darkness, of physical and emotional pain, and you know, this is powerful, short, impactful lines that you know, show us the process of what it's like to be someone who remembers, who went through abuse. You know, the touching on the cutting to and the numbness, you know, and the idea that the more a person cuts, the number those areas become, and that's why a lot of times they have to move on to other areas. And it does offer a certain high and opportunity to, you know, just feel something other than that emotional pain. You know, I like this all the way through, but I like that the line also, he cut me with lies. So there it turns to, you know, first there's the physical abuse, and then there's the idea of how much it hurts to love and trust somebody and then have them reveal themselves as a forked-tongued liar. I like, I'm here, want to rise above it all. There's, within those lines are a sense of hope, a sense of wanting to be a stronger person, a wanting to get away from it all and to rise above your circumstance. I thought, okay, is that like a nice sense of hope? And as you mentioned, Rex, when the idea of the sanctuary of the mind no longer being safe. And I also thought it was a good touch, a great addition to add in hearing his voice from echoes in my mind, hearing his voice from their mouths, mocking, taunting, laugh. So the idea that a person doesn't need to be physically there for their voice to be ingrained into your mind. So I definitely think this was an excellent write and very well done. And let's see what we got next. All right. Up next is Killing Jar by Rich F. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read, please.
The Killing Jar by Rich F. Flying high, blood-red sky, russet rouge, this golden eagle, soaring, swooping, holy ground recouping. Checking in at the hotel, morbid mortuary motel, corvid chaos, California, hotel Bella Muerte, hell's bells, such sweet surrender, cosmic cool contender, fated final baited breath, beautiful death. Dancing to remember, swaying to forget, sweet summer sweat. Flying now in this pickle jar, prisoner poison from afar, inhaling tortured toxic waste through her breathing tubes, bad taste. Wishing on a falling star, fall to my knees, nirvana bound, hands so tightly tied and bound, Cerberus snapping, snarling, drooling hound of hell, falling in the wishing well. And now the sudden sun's desperation poke, these dying embers, this killing joke, Diablo dancing to remember, Satan skipping to forget. Jaunt around my jingle jaw, spirit 1969. Flaunt my feelings from afar, taunting, tortured, teasing me with all your nothings in between. Smash these prison walls, the smithereens. Moth to a flame caught in between, no escaping from this killing jaw. And finally, to understand, impossible, imperfect, creature fresh in purity, hateful hotel Bella Muerte, fickle, feral fate, all too late, gasping, gasping, can't breathe, 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 and breathe, final, final, final breath. Now, I'll believe, check out any time you like, but you can never leave. And
great read there, Rex. I have to say, I really like this one. He took the line, check in at the Hotel Bella Muerte. It gives the weak flight. It gives the blind sight. And as is pretty obvious, he also was inspired by Hotel California by the Eagles, which makes a lot of sense because there's a very similar tone. Not music-wise, as in, you know, but in the lyrics and in the thought of the song to both songs. So I think it really worked well to mix the two together. As always, he's got wonderful rhyme and alliteration. I like how dark this went, and the title Killing Jar was also really great because the song that those lines come from is, I'm blanking out now. It has the first line, one of the first lines of the song has the phrase Killing Jar in it. Flying now in this pickle jar, a prisoner poised from afar, inhaling tortured toxic waste through the breathing tube, bad taste. I like that he went with the pickle jar and the whole idea that, like, when children capture butterflies or lightning bugs, and they'll put it in, like, a pickle jar, and then through her breathing tubes, I feel like there's a kind of a sense of not just addiction, but codependency. There, the idea that when somebody else breathes, that's your breath, and so when they stop breathing, that's you stop breathing. Again, the spirit of 1969 was a great reference to the Eagles song. I also like, and now the sudden sunset in desperation poke these dying embers, this killing joke, Diablo dancing to remember, Satan skipping to forget. And it's interesting how he uses two different names for Satan
as if they're two different people, a dual personality, and one is trying to remember and one is trying to forget. A very dramatic ending. And again, we have some religion brought in with the idea of impossible, imperfect, creature present purity. You know, that it's like as if somebody is on their deathbed and they're trying to grasp how can in those last seconds they be made pure. And I thought it added a nice touch to the breathe, last breath. Just beautiful, haunting language and the struggle of getting caught up in the world of glamour and addiction. So very well done.
I get a chance of being stuck in their own private hell. It could be the thought of being tied in bed with tubes to aid you in breathing and feed you, because he does hit on that thought with, where is it? Bloody hell, I just had it. Lying now in this pickle jar, prisoner poisoned from afar, inhaling tortured toxic waste through her deep breathing tubes, bad taste. But he does hit on a lot of notes from the Hotel California song, Sweet Summer Sweat, just to turn around, dancing to remember, swaying to forget. And again, he did that with the Diablo dancing to remember, and then skipping to forget. There is a note of someone waiting for that, the killing jar being that bed, and they're waiting to die, knowing that they might have flown once well as that golden eagle, trying to recoup that holy ground, but not where they are. You got Corbett in here, so you got those crows awaiting as well. Hotel Bella Muerte, Hell's Bells rings in this as well. Such sweet surrender, cosmic cool contender, bated final, bated breath, a beautiful death. Now, that hits on a turn of events, because he does bring in Cerberus, the Hound of Hell. So, and falling in the wishing well, there's that note, because it hasn't died yet. It's going back and forth, hitting on these notes of what is going on and how it's going. And then there's, and now the sudden sunset, desperation poke, these dying embers, this killing joke. I thought that was nicely done, too. Moths into a flame, caught in between, no escape from this killing jar. Then there's a reality hitting in there. And everything here, from then on down, all those breathing notes, can't breathe. Gasping, can't breathe, breathe. Now I believe. There is that note concerning the demons, the devil, and Cerberus, and everything else. You can check out any time you like, but you aren't ever leaving hell.
Exactly. Yeah. I like that. That was a really good analysis of the poem. And the song the line was taken from is "The Jet Set Life Is Going to Kill You." So I think he had a lot of lines that worked really well with that. And I'd like to welcome Faziana to the show. Hey, Fazy, how's it going?
Hey, you pretty good. Thank you.
Awesome.
I liked the poem. I didn't get to hear it, but I was glancing over it as Rex was commenting, and it has some great alliteration in there.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have to say, I think with Rich, he gets so good at alliteration that you can almost miss it. Like, you know how sometimes, any poetic device can be used to the point where it almost becomes a sore thumb. But he always uses it in such a way that it blends naturally into the poem.
Agreed.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, We are glad you are here. And, of course, as is the tradition, when you show up as the third person, you get put to work right away. So. Up next, we have War-Worn Lipstick by Kay Heartless. And go ahead, Daisy, and do that read for us, please.
War-Worn Lipstick by Kay Heartless. Just give me my war-worn lipstick, the deadly one I've battled in. Hemorrhaging red, a pucker-up patrol that won't medevac their dead. Face, the front line fornication. Mouth, a fiery wick of flame. Just give me my war-worn lipstick, twin blood vessels bursting bright. Breach the crowded bar's battalion with their pulsing strobe lights. A surrender of his smile before a spanked bottom lip. Just give me my war-worn lipstick, seared from a skirmish of satisfaction, purified by a ceasefire desire. How many uniformed men does it take to satisfy? Ask the live wire that lies between my thighs. End poem.
That is a bite at the end. Well read there, Adriana. All right, Pam, all yours.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree there's some biting or some nibbling or something going on at the end. First of all, that is a really cool picture that she chose to put with the prompt. And that was a great read of Adriana. I really looked at like you put some kind of like sass into that needed for to be in this write. First of all, I like how this imagery is a combination of sensual and visceral. The deadly one I battled in hemorrhaged red, a pucker-up patrol that won't medevac their dead, face the front line of fornication, mouth a fiery wick of flame. I like face the front line of fornication not only for the alliteration, that rhymes, all right, but also just because it just has the whole vibe of a woman who has a very strong sexual appetite and isn't afraid to admit it. This poem kind of reminds me of, and I don't know if everybody would agree with me on this, but I think when women put on red lipstick, for the most part, it makes us feel bold. It's almost like putting on a costume of a different voice. I really like a surrender of his smile before a spanked bottom lip. Just give me my war-worn lipstick seared from a skirmish of satisfaction. This is just an excellent, dark, sensual write. And I don't even know if it's particularly dark, but it definitely has that whole feel of a cat licking the cream off of her mouth and just smiling wickedly. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you. And Daisy, you got to read that. How fare you after the war?
I enjoyed it. I like the way that the red is described. I mean, it's mentioned as blood several times, but said in a different way. Hemorrhaging red is a really strong way of saying that. Twin blood vessels bursting bright. I really liked seared from a squirmish of satisfaction. Yeah, there's so much in here where it's repetitive, but it's said in a different creative way. A fiery wick of flame. There's something really like literally hot in the description of this. Like it has fire. It has like all the different kinds of like description for red that makes it powerful. And there is kind of a sassiness to the tone, I think, that I liked, the spanked bottom lip. It's fun, and it does have that kind of embracing of the female desire. I really liked that, like Pam said. And there is something about putting on bold lipstick where it makes you feel a little bit bold. It is sort of like a costume, and it's like you're putting on that part of your persona, of yourself. I thought that was really well done.
Thank you, Faisy. I got a different thought. Because that first stanza, that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th line down, face the front line of fornication. So she's hitting on that note. The face and the lipstick are that front line, what she's getting into. And she puts it down as a war-torn, battled-in, pucker-up patrol, medevac, they're dead. So there's the darkness in that. She's going out for war, literally. The hemorrhaging red, the twin blood vessels, the bursting, the bars battalion. This all walks a surrender. This all walks that note of actually physically almost going to war within this. And let's see what else we got here. Then the end, how many men, uniform men, does it take to satisfy? Ask the live wire that lies between my thighs. It's almost like there's a touch of malice. Maybe this is the, there's a bit more going on behind the scenes of this, so to speak. Because she hits on the sort of dead up top and the live wire. That can hit on a couple of things, but she also throws in front line of fornication. This isn't anything about deliberate patrolling, going to war. There's something a little deeper in this.
I like that thought, Rex. I do think this works well on a different level, that it does have that sensuality to it. But, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking that last line, based on your approach of the poem, Rex, and your thoughts, the question, how many men does it take, ask the live wire? Well, while listening to you, I started thinking about the idea that the live wire, rather than being the man or whatever else that live wire could be sexually, it could be the bomb that needs to be diffused, and which is a specialist category. You know, not very few people, I would guess, okay, I don't know for sure, but I would think that knowing exactly which wires to cut on a bomb is not something everybody knows. And so I do think it could work on that approach, as well as, on the approach of being about sex. Although on the approach of it being about sex, to quote Pat Benatar, I would like to say love is a battlefield.
Well, the live wire means she could be the bomb and he gets an ear with a knitting needle in it.
There you go. Very true. Very true. All right. I so rarely remember the singer's name, so when I do, I have to say I'm just so happy. All right. And up next is The Touch by Nan529. And this one I will give a trigger warning for people listening in, and it goes like this. I shiver at your vile touch as you run your hands over me, unaware you do not care. I'm just a piece of meat to you. You feel no love, for love to you is a barren land of wasted emotions. Your soul is black as the night, dead as casted off snake skin. Are you the devil's son? Your cruelty knows no boundaries. Our love is but a toxic relationship, dying bit by bit in a mindless sea. You're as cold as an iceberg. You have no heart. Black is the kiss from dead lips, the touch of a serpent's son. You're just an empty vessel. I question myself. Why do I stay? Moods changing, blowing hot and cold. You look at me with dead man's eyes. You even try to rewire my brain. Sweet words you whispered in my ears, followed by your heartless rages. Stop with your sick projections. Would your red blood pour out black from its blood veins, slithering to the floor? No love,
no soul promises made. How could we change? For me, your ways all to no avail. You drain me of emotions. I see now you have never loved me. You take joy from your vicious cruelty, smiling as I cry. Your soul is as black as the night. You are an emotional vampire. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Daisy, how about you? What do you think about this one? Damn. All that snake skin up top.
I thought it was an interesting exploration of an unhealthy relationship. Sounds like the partner is a narcissist or maybe sociopath. Like the trying to rewire her brain and the projections and all that makes me feel like narcissist. But the dead man's eyes, there's like something about that where you can just tell if someone's not fully there and not really caring about you in that eye. So I think the dead man's eyes is a strong detail to include there. I really like the part where it talked about the blood coming out black. Red blood pour out black from the veins, slithering to the floor. It's like it's not blood. There's snakes within him. Because he's so evil. Well, I don't know him, but I'm just, for some reason I picture it as a man. This is intense, and it's full of feeling that kind of makes my skin crawl. Like there are snakes, but it's even scarier when the person is the snake. Well done.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Paisy. All right, Pam, you got to read it.
Yeah, I really liked this. I felt like it was a bit different and a bit darker than Nan usually goes. And I like the picture that she chose with it of the snake skin against the black backdrop. She did mention in a comment to somebody that this was on a relationship that her daughter had with a narcissist. And so I think that was a good call on Baby's part to notice. So there were lines that spoke of that narcissistic personality. And this very powerful emotionally, and it's interesting because about how, like, with the narcissist and the manipulation, how it speaks of the manipulation and the trying to change the person's thinking and trying to change your personality. And it also speaks, although it doesn't use the term walking on eggshells, when it talks about going from warm to the rages, you know, and so it gives that feel of, you know, having to walk on eggshells around somebody. And, you know, how the mood change happens so quickly. And I do like that she opens it up with, "I shiver at your vile touch." And the idea that once somebody makes themselves known to be someone who truly doesn't care, being physically touched by them is repulsive. And I like also where she says, "No love, no soul promises made." Almost the idea that, you know, the promises that are made are all empty. They're shallow. They mean nothing. So I think this is an excellent write and very well done.
Great comments, guys. Yeah, this is a little bit more viscous and vile. It takes on a little bit more detail into that personality of him. As a previous write, which we also commented on, I think about 2 weeks ago, this digs deeply into who and what he is and what he emitted, which is pretty dark.
It is, but, yeah, it is definitely.
Yeah, more than just an emotional vampire. Twisted mofo. All right, we're back to you.
All right. Oh, this is a funny coincidence. So Faviana says in the room, I like your eggshell comment, Pam, and in 2 weeks, that's the theme of Part Sinner, Part Saint. And sure enough, look at that. She's got a contest posted. Eggshells.
Eggshells.
Isn't it? Yep.
Yes, as in walking on eggshells, like trying not to disturb in a disturbing situation.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yep. All right. Well, I'm definitely going to have to check out that contest with Aviana. You always find some awesome quotes. You and Neutron just really find some great quotes out there on the Internet. So. All right. Up next is I'm No Hero by Teray Mistway. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Okay. Here it comes up. All right, where are you? Aha. I'm No Hero by Teray Mistway. I am not a hero on a scale. I'm a zero. If anything, I'm a villain that deserves to be slain. I'm not anything special. I'm in league with the devil. I contribute no good to society, and I consistently struggle with sobriety. I swear that I'm up to no good. It's just that kind of mood. I haven't felt any love in a while, and now I walk alone for miles. Let me cry until the doomsday clock cracks my zero. Let me die, for I will never be your hero. And Pam. All right, Pam. How about it?
Great read, Rex. I really like this one by Teray. It's interesting how it kind of goes all to a sense of extremes. Where at first, you know, it almost has an anti-hero vibe to it, but to me what's interesting is that he starts out with, I am not a hero. On a scale, I'm a zero. And you almost think this is someone who just really has bad self-esteem. But then it starts getting kind of a little darker, like a lot darker. If anything, I'm a villain that deserves to be slain. I'm not anything special. I'm in league with the devil. I contribute no good to society, and I consistently struggle with sobriety. And you realize this isn't just self-esteem issues because this person feels like there's something weak and unworthy about them. It almost takes a turn of almost having a serial killer type vibe to it, where it's almost this neurosis that is so that this person no longer has control over their own thoughts, their own actions. It's almost as if what the voices tell them to do, they do. And let me cry until the doomsday clock strikes zero. Let me die, or I will never be your hero. And I like that he puts in your as if it's addressing a single person. Or it could even be your, meaning a group of people that have come to hero worship somebody. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Amazing. How about you?
I think that it's weird because it shows a little bit that they are a good person even when they say they're not, because they're concerned about the fact that they're not. They want the person who's looking for a hero to stay away and not be under their bad influence. So to me, that shows a little bit of good in them because they're recognizing their flaw and they're trying to warn the person. So it's that conflict of, like, they're not a hero, but aren't they, by trying to save them from themselves. It also really reminds me of the song Hate Me by Blue October. And in that, the singer who struggles with sobriety is basically saying, like, stay away from me because I'm bad for you, and it'd be easier and better for you if you hated me and you left, because loving me is too painful. And this kind of has that vibe.
Well, damn your ornery eyes. That was pretty good. I got to walk that same tone. Yeah, it's not about serial killers. It's about an addict. And that's with the thought with sobriety kind of sets the note, because no serial killer will up the thought of understanding between taking life and not taking life, being good and being evil. They don't think about that. Their sociopathy means they have nothing in the way of thoughts to anybody except themselves. This one does show that little touch of thoughts when he is straight, but also knows that he's always up to no good, because that urge is coming to take on that addictive quality once more. And the thought of not feeling any love in a while, and now I walk alone for miles, is a mixed note of, hey, I created my own hell, and this is it. And you let me die, for I will never be a hero. It's kind of hits that note of, I'm already halfway there. Just let it go. I ain't never coming back. All right. Back to you.
Great comment, Rex. I like that you brought up the idea of the self-awareness of one's own addiction and doom and personal health. Okay, question of Faziana. Do you hear that when Rex's voice changes, like it goes all robotic and then it goes back to normal?
Yeah,
well,
it was freaking me out. It was like he was a robot or like a demon, and then all of a sudden, like right when I was about to say something, he went back to normal.
That's been happening, and I tried hanging myself up and calling back, and it didn't change it. And then because it just happened. Yeah, it's like that. Exactly. Only it happens for like minutes on end. And it's so like demonic and robotic feeling that it's the funny thing is that as soon as your normal voice comes back, I like have this slight sigh of relief, like, oh my goodness, there's his regular voice back. So
I kind of wondered if the speaker
yeah.
on my phone was broken because it was so distorted.
Yes,
well, it's happened
right?
on your end, too. Right there. It ain't just me.
Oh, does it happen with our voices, too?
Yep.
Okay. Because earlier I'd asked and you had said no, that it wasn't happening with my voice. So, you know, I didn't know that it had started up. All right. Now, the next poem I'm going to post is going to look like the link is broken, but it will work. And the next poem up is Les Années Folies, or Crazy Years, by Sia Ray. And Faziana, would you give that a read for us, please?
I'd be happy to. Les Années Folles, or Crazy Years, by Sia Ray. Parisians in 1921, 2,906, oh no, sorry, yeah, I can't say numbers, sorry, I'm going to start again. Parisians in 1921, 2,906,472, a growing sum from 288107 in 1911, before a time of celebration and optimism from 1919, imaginarily promised, celebratory, a victory in the Great War. World rulers, including President Woodrow Wilson, arrived soon in Paris to join in. Treaty of Versailles finished, signed on the 28th of June. Bread rations to end, with enormous warehouses dispensing by sales to those with something to spend. Famine no longer to ravish and win. Impregnable Thiers Wall, rung around the city between 1841 and 1846, when fortifications were sprung, with the discussion of turning its wide strip of land into a new park, not begun. for low-cost housing for Parisian workers, with demolition to be done on May 5th, construction of a 7-story unit for many a young couple in Love Spins Spun to be wonderfully won, though needed to join a list for their own new home on it, marital bliss, to insist. Yet, romantic requests were long prolonged, so many this opportunity did unfortunately miss. As a number of Italian-born Parisians, 2/3 of which were employed in construction and public works, 10,000 Czechs and Slovaks, a large number of Armenians, survivors of the 1915 massacres, deployed, and many French-speaking former Russian aristocrats familiar with the city, who found jobs as Paris taxi drivers amongst a vast emigrational aristocracy amid many other races, hastening to Paris. Yes, from 1921 until the Great Depression reached Paris in 1931, the French economy boomed. Through this period, called Les Années Folles, or the Crazy Years, seen, Paris reestablished as the capital of art, music, literature, and cinema scene, and artistic ferment and low prices attracted writers and artists from around the world, including Pablo Picasso, Salvador Dali, Ernest Hemingway, James Joyce, and Josephine Baker, housing being consumed. Pushed out, residents felt intercity dwellers forlorn. After receiving a rejection letter, with whom no one to implore, dwelt with badly, sad in their faces. What an international pity to abhor. Even emigre propinquity? End poem.
Great read, Paisley. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what do you got?
Well, first of all, that was an excellent read, I have to say. And I really like it. It's interesting how, I'm always find history interesting. And the fact that she delved into a particular section of history in the time period of Paris, and offers us up the story and the explanation of how Paris became so much of a center for art, the art culture of art and the artists that it attracted, due to its cheap prices and such. And Paris reestablished as the capital of art, music, literature, and cinema scene, artistic ferment. I like the phrase an artistic ferment in the idea that the growth of the artistic movement happened. I like that she mentions the different, that it's not just the French people there in Paris. It's the Czechs, the Slovaks, the Russians, that it becomes about in that time period how there was a diverse culture. And so after receiving a rejection letter with whom no one to implore dealt with badly, it's interesting how she took something as simple as these two people reading a letter and it all becomes about the idea of being rejected on the personal, it's a personal message, but on the grander scale, is the whole idea of what Paris was within that time period right after the World War I. So, excellent write and very well done.
Nicely said, Dan. Thank you. And, Stacey, you got to read this. What'd you think?
I think I'm embarrassed. I don't know how to say numbers anymore. It's been so long since I've seen.
No,
I don't
feel
that
way. I read it the same way you did because of the space. It threw me off until I looked up and realized, oh, shit, that's the population.
Yeah.
So, no, don't feel too bad. I got the same thing.
Thank you. I found it interesting. I don't know much of the history of Paris. I do remember learning about the Treaty of Versailles, but it's interesting to hear about the other things that were going on. Yeah, it was definitely an I think educational piece of that time, and I always like having like a tiny bit of French to remind myself of the days when I used to speak it. This is a nice informative piece.
Absolutely. Yeah, like you, I got thrown on that numbers up top. Having a space there was kind of a funky draw. But that note to the ending of the war, that all of Europe was being ravaged at that time, and everything was shorter. I mean, all good, because you look at by the end of the treaty being signed on the 28th of June, now bread rations to end with enormous warehouses dispensing by sales to those with something to spend. So not everything is going once more to the war effort. It's being spread into the city once more. So you get the famine no longer to ravish and win. And here's that note of thought with the tears wall that rung around the city between 1841 and 46. And there's that note of thought, a new park not begun for low-cost housing working for Parisian workers, with demolition be done on May 5th. Well, it kind of hits on those noted thoughts of promises made, promises forgotten, as all of a sudden, all is good, but it doesn't get done. And then you get the import because of all those massacres that were going on. The thought of trying to eliminate peoples was even going on during World War I as well, and that. And I think that the note of thought with all the now that Paris is on the up and on the light again, you've got that reintroduction, Picasso, Dali, Hemingway, Joyce, Josephine Baker, and many more who flocked back to Paris, helping bring back that light and joy that Paris had always enjoyed beforehand. Because those were dark years, dark long years, six, seven years just about. And the emigre propinquity kind of hits on that, keeping the immigrants at arm's length, because what they bring, they're different. They're not just the language, their belief systems. The transition's not always an easy thing when you've got a real heavy influx into a city that's traditionally been who and what it was, full of French. All right, Pam.
I like that, Rex, as well said there about change not always being an easy thing. And
back then it was different. There wasn't a whole lot of movement across. I mean, you had those who could afford to move back and forth across the countries, because they traveled all across Europe, up into China and to Russia and all that. But you didn't have that huge influx going from one country, because everything there is being destroyed, and you got that refugee run. But that wasn't really happening back then. You get a big war like that, all of a sudden the whole of Europe is on fire, and you've got a massive territory exposed like never before, and people disappear into the woodwork trying to find a place anywhere. And that influx kind of throws the cities and a country off balance.
That is true. I remember actually a social studies teacher of mine talking about that, about how the certain time periods when living in the country becomes more popular, and then it does create an imbalance because the idea that, pretty soon when too many people move out to the country, it no longer becomes the country they want it to be in. It becomes overpopulated. So definitely well said there. these voices that come up when the voices change, it always reminds me of that scene in the original Ghostbusters where she says, "There is no Dana, there is only Zool."
All right. Zulu, Azazil.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Oh, you should. Hey, Rex, you should, like, that poem you did a recording for, you should make sure to attach it to the poem and then share it with Afasiana, because I think that she'd really appreciate that. But we only have two poems. Oh, it is awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, I put it at the bottom. I should have put it at the top.
No, it works on the bottom. It does. Bottom, top, I'm in favor of both. All right. So up next is Lagomuras by Kay Heartless, and it goes like this. Discarded muses take the train after a bike through cubist rain, bumpy ride for the dropped devotee, painted near the porch cliché. Seems that blue had been a fad he never intended to even add. Wait to her hand so feather light, painting her breast by candlelight. She proudly posed for Mon Bordel, fulfilling fantasies full throttle. Her cogs now faulty, sputtering. She was his machine of suffering. After years as his fortune teller, his private bloom, his flower seller, to be decanted from the coolest cellar, a doormat now, belt and pure, never a goddess more diverse than pensive Olga Lagomuras. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you. And Basie, we got a chance to use a little bit more of your French. Aha.
I really enjoyed this. The idea of her being a discarded muse, you know, she was the inspiration for a while when he was in a certain kind of section of his career painting, and then now that she doesn't fit the mood of his new style, she's been cast aside. I don't know if that's the truth of the woman in the painting. I don't know the history of the painting, but I find the concept very intriguing. And this poor girl who's like, now what do I do? I was the muse, and now I'm nothing. Years as his fortune teller, his private bloom, his flower seller, because she posed for all of those types of roles in the painting, and now is just a doormat cast aside. That's really intriguing. I really, really like it. And yes, I do like having the French in there. Lagomuras. Very nice.
Thank you, Faisy. And how about you?
First of all, I like what Faisy and I had to say. And what I like about this, and I did have to Google this, and I had to re-Google it just to have the information for me, but Lagomuras is actually another painting done by Picasso. So I like that she used it as a title. And it's a caricature of his friend Pierre Manac painted on the a caricature of his friend was painted on the back side of it. And the painting itself is actually of... And it's a term, the term Lagomuras was used for the singers and dancers of cafe concerts. Like when you go to the cafe, and it was often referred to ones that sang songs or danced in ways that were sexually suggestive. And you can picture the whole idea of someone being attracted to one of these dancers, one of these singers, and seeing them as a muse, something to be inspired by, and then to realize that, you know, to me it has the feel of a woman who thinks she's going to get out of her circumstance, only to find herself in a worse one. And I like this all the way through, but especially she probably pose for Mon Bordel, fulfilling fantasies full throttle. It was really nice the way she went back and forth between the French and the English and the near rhyme really flowed beautifully. So I think it's excellent write and very well done.
Yes, because she hits on diverse at the bottom, and I think the pronunciation of that is Lagomuz, like a UZ, or kind of hitting on that diverse thought. The cubist rain up in that second stanza, that was a nice touch. And using the second picture as a reference point to Olga was also another nice touch. And dropping in that second stanza hits on all those notes of how she ended up feeling and being treated by him because of his philandering. And there was some nice touches, dropping a devotee to hit on the thought with a port de cliché, and where else was it? Mon bordel and throttle. Nice near rhymes that work well and keep the pace going. All right, coming back to you.
All right, now with a couple minutes left, do you want to get the last poem done or carry it over?
Is it a shorty?
It's a medium one. Why don't we just put it on?
All right.
We'll just go, carry it over.
Am I boxing again, Faisy? Yeah.
All right. So, Faisy, what do you have coming up for shows?
For Part Sinner, Part Saint, we are doing Babbler's Contest about grit. So she has 7 quotes that use the word grit, and that's going to be the Saturday morning / Friday night, late night show. And then next week for Double Helix, we have one that's a quote from Carl Jung. That one is... here we go. Everything that irritates us about others can lead us to an understanding of ourselves, by Carl Jung. And then, like I said, the eggshell one is going to be the Part Sinner, Part Saint for that week. So we always have contests going. Please check out mine, Dexter's, and Babbler's.
Babbler's.
Awesome.
How about you, Pam? Because you got tomorrow for Twisted Tuesday.
Yes. Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters and the Twisted Mister or Two. Today, I should say, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time is World Oceans Day, and so we will be going through poetry inspired by the ocean and ocean conservation. For Into the Darkness on Friday at 12:30 a.m., Rex is running that contest, and it's What Do You See When You Gaze Into the Darkness? In other words, it's the whole idea of you choose the topic and give us something dark, and I really like that, so check out that contest. And, of course, Rex, what do you got coming up?
Next Tuesday, no, that's not next Tuesday, that's the week after. There is Going Gonzo, that's on the board. Have some fun with that. Quotes from Hunter S. Thompson to play with. And I've got to put up a contest for this Sunday.
Gonzo is 2 weeks from now. A week from Allen Ginsberg. All right.
Cool.
And sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
Well,
and rhythm,
I had an old
rhythm
evening.
And rhyme. It has been a nice evening.
Oh, I had trouble finding some lyrics on those 3 people I was looking at, so I had to go fall on something else. And I'm going to hit on Black Pistol Fire for this week.
Ooh,
I can actually
good
find
choice.
Their
good
yes,
choice.
And they're relatively recent as well, so something a little different.
Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to that contest. And
All right. Awesome show, Rex. And thank you for being here, Faziana.
All right, gang. We'll see you next Tuesday morning. Otherwise, have a very good week. And don't stay up too late. Or don't stay out too late. Or, hey, just plain visit. We'll be here. Hi, gang.
Absolutely. Good night.